The World Health Organization defines addiction as a chronic relapsing condition. Dahab Private Hospital recognizes that addiction is a multifaceted illness affecting an individual's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, and practical well-being. With 28 and 90-day residential rehabilitation programs and Dahab's accredited private health fund approved treatment service, you or your loved one can get the help you need to navigate the rehabilitation process to regain control, to overcome that addiction, and to take back your life. If this resonates, then take the first step and call Dahab Private Hospital for addiction treatment. Addiction is treatable and recovery is possible. 1-800-329-422 or dahab.com.au. Dahab is one word, D-A-Y-H-A-B, dahab.com.au. Are we going already?
We are.
Did we get that me saying that weird thing?
Yep. Oh,
giddy up. Are you all right?
I'm great, thank you.
You just arrived. I just arrived. Our guest, who I'll introduce in just a moment, arrived. What have you been up to today? Have you been productive? You're going away selfishly tomorrow.
Yes, I know. I'm a little bit excited.
Mm.
I'm just trying to make sure everything's done.
Mm. Did we talk about this on a previous podcast?
You're going away? We did.
Mm.
On the one with Jackie.
So you're going away to Port Douglas?
Yes.
What will you be doing most of the time? That's right. I remember about you and son. Not much?
Are you very good at relaxing?
I can't see you being very good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
What do you do with your OCD on holidays? Do you leave it at the airport? What, do you just put it in the fucking top drawer when you get...
Yeah, I put it in a locker and
What do you...
I'm just trying to manage that the best way I can at the
moment. But you are a workaholic, aren't you?
And there's a few things that I know in my head that I will think about when I'm away. So I'm just trying to silly things that I know is all up to date and all okay. But I know that there's part of my head that will just kind of second guess it. So, yeah, I'm just trying to make sure that I've ticked all the boxes.
We did a podcast last night with Jackie Lauder, and then you went home and did whatever you do at bloody Camp Melissa, and I ate food and fell asleep or whatever I do. And then I spoke to you this morning for our morning check-in on all things business, and I go, "How'd you sleep?" And you went, "Yeah, pretty good." And I'm like, not that convincing. I go, "What time do you go to bed?" You go, 3:30.
I did an EMA. Let's just say I did an EMA.
3:30. Well, how much sleep did you get? Oh, you know, a couple of hours, 2 or 3 hours. I'm pretty sure that
it's
holiday.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to get to relax in a couple of days.
I don't know that you've learned that much over the last 120 or so episodes about managing self.
It was actually pretty good, though. It was pretty calm, and I just needed to get a few things done. Now they're done.
Well, your body will be just pumping out cortisol today, so enjoy that.
Thanks.
So a couple of weeks ago, everyone, I put a thing on Facey and Insta, and I said, and this was an interesting exercise for me, because I thought I wouldn't get much of a response. Because and the question was, would any of you like to come on and interview me and kind of use the time on air, come into the studio? You don't need any experience. You don't need to be famous. You don't need a fucking brand or a profile. You don't need to be a particular demographic. All you need is to be a human who can think and talk, and you qualify. And I thought that would be interesting for a lot of people, but most people would be too scared to, because apparently I'm a bit intimidating. Although I think that's bullshit. I'll ask our guest in a moment. And we got within, I don't know, 6 hours, over 100 people sending. And I made it, you can't just comment.
Yeah.
That doesn't count.
Yeah.
So usually when you say, you give people a little bit of work to do, well, no, you've actually got to go and write an email and send it to this address. And then usually 90% of people go, fuck that. I don't want to do any work. Well, we got over 100 in a very short period of time. And then I came back onto the old socials and went, stop. So.
And then you had the ones that had kind of overthought it. So they took a little while longer because they were kind of trying to make
it perfect. Also, a few people wrote epistles like the fucking the new gospel. I'm like, hey, relax. Just send me fucking 7 words, will you? I've got a job to do. And also some people are like, oh, yeah, I really reckon I could add value to your podcast, like they were going to come on here and be some fucking personality. I'm like, relax. Just come on. Ask me your questions like we're having a coffee, but there's a few other people yep. listening. That was kind of the idea. But anyway, so I decided, because I was going to do it with either one or two people in the studio, I decided that we would maybe do this once a month, or and I've contacted a few people that are going to come in, and Shelby, who I'll introduce in a moment, is first cab off the rank. And to those of you that I haven't got back to, I apologize, but I've still got, and I'm not asking for any more. So if you're in the original group, there's every chance that you might get some, you might be contacted by Melissa or myself at some stage, but we've got a few lined up. Now, so today, come in close to that microphone, you, is a young lady who hails from up my way originally, where I did most of my growing up. Some people would argue me growing up. But Latrobe Valley, so Warrigal is on the – it's not actually part of Latrobe Valley, is it?
No.
It's just outside it. Shelby Hamilton is her name. She's 21, which is almost as old as my jocks. And she's in the studio. Hi, Shelby.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being had. So it's interesting that somebody who – and we do have listeners from probably – I guess your age, maybe a few 18, 19, 20-year-olds, but my demographic is, although we do have everyone, guys and girls, all ages, but probably there's a lot of people who are mid-30s on. So how long have you been listening to the podcast?
Oh, probably the last year.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or so?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, well, all right.
Caught up on all the early ones.
Did you? How many have you listened to, do you reckon? So this is, I don't know when this is coming out, but this will be give or take. There's over 100 up. How many do you reckon you've listened to?
I reckon I've listened to about 97 of 100.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's impressive.
Now, without being too bossy, you need to talk a tiny bit louder.
with my disgusting sick voice.
Yeah, sorry about the sick voice, but we just need, that's the only one you've got. So what were the, which of the podcasts, if any, or any of the guests or any of the thoughts or the ideas, like what's the stuff that resonates for you? Like why do you listen to it? I'm not trying to get an endorsement. I'm just interested in, you know, why you listen to the podcast.
I love hearing about the shit. Mm. I like hearing how people got to where they got to. I like hearing the shit that people have to go through to get to where they are. Mm. I like hearing about people's brains, the way they work, how they think, why they think that, why people go to the supermarket at 3 o'clock in the morning and eat a tub of ice cream when they know they shouldn't eat a tub of ice cream.
And especially when that person's a doctor.
Yeah. And hides the spoon in the car.
Yeah.
No, it's really interesting. It's definitely something that's helped me grow as a person and something that helps other people grow. Mm.
I think it's awesome that not necessarily just this podcast, but I think it's great that at 21 – you are exposing yourself to really interesting people and conversations and ideas, and you put up your hand and went, no, I want to come and talk to you, and I'm going to spend an hour and a quarter or whatever driving each way, not because you want to fucking build your Insta following or because you're a, you know, but because you go, I want to learn some stuff. So I like that. So before you start asking me questions, give us a little bit of context about you, give us a bit of a snapshot of some of the stuff that you've been through and some of the stuff that you're dealing with. And the reason that I do this is because people relate to stories and people connect with experiences of other people. And as you, like before we went on air, you and Melissa were talking about the OCD episode where she was talking about all her fucking overthinking and irrational behavior with Brad McEwen, and you're like, yeah, I love that one. And because we see ourselves in others.
Yeah.
You know, so we're all insecure at times. We're all overthinkers. We're all scared. We're all uncertain. We're all trying to fucking figure out life. And at 21, you know, at 21, I had no idea. I wasn't as clever as you are. I wasn't thinking. You know, I was like, my biggest thing was, how can I find more chicken? I mean, that was my day-to-day
How much can I bench press? Where can I get more chicken? And is that girl, does she even know I'm alive? That was pretty much, they were my three questions.
That's important.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Warrigal?
Yep.
And grew up down there?
I did.
And tell us about childhood, good, bad, amazing?
Yeah, so I've always lived down in that way. Yep. Had quite a difficult childhood. Mm. My parents split when I was 12 or 13.
Yeah.
I went through a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, not because of that, but just because of the shit that life throws at you, I guess.
There would have been some. I would think that would have had an effect.
Yeah, it definitely did. It was hard sort of having everything. I don't deal very well with change. I still don't. I didn't back then.
That makes you very human. That's good that you have that awareness though.
Yeah.
And that is, okay, I'll shut up. Keep talking. I'm almost started coaching you. Shut up, Harps. Keep talking. So mum and dad split up. How old were you?
I was 12, I think, when that happened.
Okay.
I stayed with dad. I was sort of brought up with the mentality with him of harden up, get over it, you'll be fine, toughen up, princess.
Suck it up.
Yep. Which was good to a point, but yep. When you're going through that kind of stuff, that's not the kind of stuff that helps you get through it.
And God bless dad, but a lot of dads, can I ask what dad does? What's dad's job?
He's a plumber.
Plumber, yeah. Okay. I think you told me that before, but, and you know, dads and mums do the best they can.
Yeah.
But we always forget when we're kids too that, like when you're a little kid, you think mum and dad know everything, they got shit figured out. And then you get to your age, 21, you go, no, mum and dad are fucked up too. Yep. Not just me. Or mum and dad are a bit fucked up. Or mum and dad are, because we kind of have our parents on this pedestal, and then you realize that when the wheels fall off, you go, they're not what I thought necessarily, which is not to run them down, but probably dad the plumber when you were the 12-year-old girl who was depressed and anxious and with a bunch of issues, he perhaps didn't have the skills or the knowledge or the awareness or the insight to know how to optimally manage you or that.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
He did the best with what he knew at the time.
Yeah.
It did help having him there, and we grew up, I was best friends with him growing up.
Mm.
And then, it sort of spiraled downhill at high school, hanging out with the wrong crowds, doing things that I shouldn't be doing, not caring about things that I should have been caring about.
What were you doing that shouldn't be doing?
I was a bit feral. Hanging out with all the smokers and wagging school and not caring about things that were going to actually help me and not caring about people that were going to help me.
Were you rebelling? Or were you just like, didn't give a fuck?
I just didn't give a fuck.
Okay.
Thought I was top notch. Mm. Thought I knew everything. Thought I didn't need to have anyone else help. Mm. Sort of in the mindset of dealing with my own shit and not putting that onto anyone else and pushing it to the back and marching on. But obviously that doesn't work very well, as you find out.
So do you reckon that there was a period of time where, you know, life was messy, and so you're a kid, like you're not even mature yet, and you're not emotionally evolved, and you're figuring out life, and mum and dad go separate ways, and you know, you had no relationship with your mum at that time, or not much of one?
Yeah, so mum and I were never close growing up, and then when she moved out, I didn't speak to her for about 2 years.
Mm.
So dad took on the role of mum and dad, which was overwhelming for him. And again, doing the best that he could with what he had.
And why, feel free to answer or not answer, whatever. You said I never got on great with mum. What? How come?
We were just never close. I had two brothers, have two brothers, and they were always pretty close with her, but I was always very close with dad. On the weekends or after work, I'd be out in the shed helping him with his cars, or we'd go camping or fishing. Or
you a tomboy?
I was. Loved motorbikes. I hated pink. I painted my whole room blue because I didn't want anyone to think that I liked pink.
Yeah. I'm with you. Fuck.
And now I've got bright pink nails. So things change. But yeah, I was really, really close with Dad growing up, and I guess I leaned on him over anyone really.
Okay. So teenage years, good, bad, shitty, messy, what happened?
Yeah, so not long after they split, I got diagnosed with depression and anxiety.
How old were you?
I was 14 when that happened.
Okay.
Being young and not really knowing how to deal with that stuff, I did let it define me, and I just thought, well, that's that. I'm depressed. I'm anxious. That's who I am. Mm. That's who I'm going to be. That's what I've got to deal with. Mm. And you kind of talk yourself into it a little bit, I think. And on your good days, you might start thinking, why am I having a good day? I'm depressed. Like, this isn't how a depressed person
I'm kidding acts. Myself. This is just, I'm faking this. So I should be anxious or depressed because they told me I am.
100%. So that was, I don't know, I didn't really deal with that. I went through a lot of different psychologists and didn't find one that really clicked with me. So I did give up on that pretty much and just thought, the universe will sort me out. I'll be fine.
Were you, in fairness to everyone, did you want to work with a psychologist? Like, were you open and receptive? Are you like, nah, fuck psychologists?
I got stuck in a little bit of a rut for a while where I don't think I really wanted to get better. I was too comfortable in how I felt, and I just thought, I wake up, I stay in bed, I wag school, this is how I'm comfortable, this is how it's going to be. And I sort of, I didn't really want to get better. I didn't want to put in the effort of seeing someone, and knowing that it was a really long road to recovery, I think sometimes I just threw in the towel and thought, it's going to take too long, it's too much work.
And so when did you, so we don't want to stay in the darkness too long, but we just want to touch on things because I feel like I'm interviewing you now, so I'm going to shut up in a moment. But so when did it turn around? So now... You seem very well adjusted and happy and clear thinking, and I know you've got multiple jobs and you're doing some study and you're working hard and you've got a picture about what you want your life to look like. And you said with me when we had a chat before, you don't want to hang out with people who drag you down, so you really got a specific idea about who you'll spend time with. So you seem to be a totally different person.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I sort of started getting a little bit better with the depression and anxiety, and then things went downhill after a relationship breakdown. I ended up in hospital after a suicide attempt, and that was really rock bottom for me.
How old were you then?
I was 18 when that happened. And after that, I remember one of my best friends came up to the hospital with me, and he was really upset, obviously, with what had gone on. And seeing him like that, I thought, if I really don't sort my shit out, like, this is going to be the end. And as hard as it was to accept that at the time, I thought, I cannot physically stay like this forever. I signed up for a 10-week challenge through my local gym, the gym that I went to. And that was sort of the start of, I guess, learning how far I can go, what I'm capable of, and stop underestimating myself, because I really didn't know what I was capable of. So doing that, I guess, was the start of really finding where my boundaries were, finding what I could do rather than focusing on the things that I couldn't do or didn't think that I could do. So that was the start of it all. And then it was sort of rolling on from there. I got really interested in how the brain works and how the brain affects what you're doing physically, and how your physical things can affect how your brain works and food and all that stuff. It's a lot to it.
So right now you are, can I say what you're doing now?
Yes.
And then you can start asking questions. So you're working in a pub?
Yeah.
Serving blokes? Are you pulling beers and all that stuff, or is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
Sorry. Serving everyone, not just blokes, of course. I don't know why I said that. I just, when I think of someone walking up to a bar. I think of a bloke getting a beer, serving all serving genders, people. serving humans. Oh fuck! Don't say anything. Up, so fucking hell. Serving humans, and you work in retail. You work in a surf store, and you're studying. You nearly finish your study in doing Cert 3 and 4 in fitness.
Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, you're in charge. You've got the floor. We know a little bit about you. Don't ask me anything too hard.
I'll try not to.
All right. Question one.
Okay. Question one. Where do you think a lack of motivation comes from?
So I'm going to ask you a question back because that's how I am. What do you think motivation is?
The drive that you have for what you want to do.
Mm.
Life, oh, good. I study, like it. Very business. Clever.
So a lack of motivation is, firstly, it's just part of the human experience. So let's define it. So what you said is drive or whatever. So generally when people talk about motivation, they're talking about the way they feel. Like I feel motivated. I am motivated. I'm excited. I'm in the zone. I'm pumped. I'm focused. It's an energy thing. It's an emotional thing. It's a how I feel thing. It's a mindset. It's everything, right? And then when the motivation goes or disappears or fades or diminishes, then that feeling diminishes also. So it's not necessarily a bad thing at all. It's a typical thing. It's a human thing. So like if I was coaching you, I would say to you, okay, so do you think that it's normal that people go through peaks and troughs of motivation?
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, okay. And do you go through peaks and troughs of motivation?
Yes.
Right. Now, do you want to be productive only when you're motivated or do you want to be productive all the time?
All the time.
Right. So then the challenge for you and all of us, if you know, now that doesn't mean every day we've got to be a 10 out of 10 and fucking, you know, cure cancer every day. And so, you know, it just means we don't want to go through weeks and months where we're sitting on the couch and eating our own body weight in fucking junk food and then we go, oh, fuck, I hate myself. I better start again. What I'm saying is that for the most part, we want to be living in alignment. That is, what are my values? What matters to me? What are my goals? What do I want my life to look like? And then based on that, what are the behaviors that for me need to be, for the most part, consistent or what we call non-negotiable? So the challenge is, how do I stay productive and proactive and effective when I can't be bothered? So when I'm not motivated. And so if you said to me, Craig, when I'm, and I don't know what you want to do, we maybe get there, but when I'm 25, I want to have done X, Y, Z, that I want X, Y, Z to be my reality. I'd go, cool. So X, Y, Z. So what are the things, the decisions you need to make now and the rules you need to put in place and the structure and the process and the timeline and all the strategic practical stuff. So now you're in the middle of a self-created process with some accountability and maybe a bit of a cheer squad or maybe a coach or a mentor or a couple of people helping you so that now you've got this thing and it's like you're now in the car and you're driving to the destination.
Yeah.
You don't just pull up at the light and go, oh, fuck, I'm going to fall asleep for 6 months and then keep driving, right? So the absence, I think I'm answering this, but the absence of motivation, it is just a part of the human experience. I don't think it necessarily arises out of too many specific. It might be sometimes lack of motivation happens when people don't get the results that they thought they would get in the timeline they thought they would get them.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes it happens when people don't respond. Oh, guess what I'm going to do? And you get all pumped and then someone goes, yeah, you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
So things like that. But on top of those external influences that can negate or impact your personal motivation, it's just an invariable part of the human experience. So, you know, I've done when I set up my business, when I first set up my business, for example, when I was not much older than you, like 4 years older than you, me being motivated or not motivated didn't come into it because I had a fucking 3-year lease and I spent all the money in the world and I had clients and I had appointments and I had commitments and I had bills and I had a landlord and I had employees and I had all these responses. So me going, oh, I'm not motivated, fucking stiff not shit. I can't, it doesn't, when you're fully committed to a process, well, you being not motivated doesn't count.
Yeah.
Right? So for me, once I went, right, well, this is what I'm doing now. This is, I'm not doing this when I'm motivated. I'm doing this. Because yeah. what we do is, and we've spoken about this before, what we do is we give ourselves a get out of jail card. We give ourselves a safety net. We give ourselves an escape clause. But when you are fully fucking committed to the thing that you want to do, be, create, change, then whether or not you're motivated doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're motivated often. But if you're not, doesn't matter because you're doing this thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How's that?
That's good. Good answer.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. What would you give me out of 10 for that?
Four.
Only child? I'll give you a 9, Craig. Awesome. Thank you.
Second question. This is kind of a bit of a typical question, but what advice would you give to the fat kid from Morwell?
The fat kid from Morwell.
Fat kid from Morwell.
Okay. If I could go back and see him.
Yeah.
Yeah, eat less cake, you little fuck.
Cheesecake or normal cake?
All of it. All of it. I was telling someone the other day, pursuant to this question, Your Honour, did I tell you about the cornflakes
and
cream?
It was on this podcast.
Oh, was it? Yeah. I couldn't remember if I said it. I speak so much, I can't remember what I said to groups or to individuals or on air or off air. Yeah, but, oh, that's right. Who? Anyway, yeah, I do give
it
the,
may or may not go up in that order, but yeah.
I did give the cornflakes and sugar and cream a good nudge back in the day. Might have been Paul Taylor. No?
Was it Jackie? Or was it Paul?
No, it wasn't Jackie. Doesn't matter. But would I do anything? I'd probably just tell him that his worth is not determined by his body shape or size or weight, and that he's a good human.
Yeah.
And that, you know, what matters, your body matters, but it really matters more from a health and a function perspective. Whereas I was very insecure, and I, you know, for me, changing my body was a way to get more positive attention and less negative attention. And to be liked, not that people liked me for my body, but they noticed me, or I became more, what's the word? I guess I became more accepted in that, okay, so now he's not fat and slow now, because I...
You fit in a bit
I was more. The only one in my... In year eight, I don't think there was anyone else when I lost all my weight. I trained like an athlete. I ran every day. I ran 10 kilometers every day. I'd get home from school and just go and run for an hour like a crazy person. And I'd play football and I'd go to football training and I'd do a million push-ups and chin-ups and sit-ups and, you know, and I'm not saying this was healthy, but for me, so I would probably talk to young Jumbo about the way that he managed himself moving forward. And, you know, what I did for the most part was good. But I would warn him about some of the you know, losing your identity in your body and seeking approval and connection and validation from, you know, appearance, which I was very much about that because, and one of the bad things is, and you would maybe understand this because you're young and you're in that space a little bit, is that when you are out of shape and you get in shape, and you go from being kind of almost socially invisible to kind of almost the opposite. Not that I was fucking a young Brad Pitt or anything, but you're like, who's Brad Pitt? He's an old movie star, doll. Oh, is he? Oh, yes, used to be big, him and George Clooney back in the day, back when I was a kid. Yeah. So for me, that was very much a lesson. What I learned was, wow, that when I look a certain way, I'm more lovable and more likable. And that's a bad lesson to learn.
And that's very dangerous, Charlie.
You know, and that's and then so then you seek validation through, which we're seeing the same thing now, and I'm not trying to sound like an old person, but we see it through social media where people want, by the way, to have a great body, to be pretty, to be handsome, to be in good shape. All of those things are great. But don't confuse what you look like with who you are, and don't confuse what you look like with happiness. Don't confuse having a good body with you know, the absence of anxiety or overthinking or insecurity or self-doubt. I would say, you know, sometimes the most attractive people, like early days when I first started PTing, it just happened this way. I ended up in my first few years training a bunch of models and lots of other people, but I had about maybe 8 models, that young female models that I worked with, who were just my clients, and they were lovely, they were nice, but they were all, and they would say, incredibly insecure. They all thought they were ugly. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like, everyone here hates you because you're so gorgeous, you know? So, yeah. Cool. Question 3, or that, have you got an expansion?
I have a little bit of an expansion. Okay.
I saw you writing notes like a professional, scribble. Like David Parkinson.
Were you in the mindset back then, speaking of, you know, if, you know, I have a better body, then I'm a little bit more noticed.
Yeah.
Were you in the mindset of, if I get a better body and then I'll be happy. If I'm more noticed, then I'll be happy. If I make friends, then I won't feel so insecure. Was that something that 100%. You dealt with?
100%. Yep, all the time. And I was completely, you know, we talk about young people now. I was the same. I was maybe worse. I was completely insecure. At that time, I didn't know who I was. I was a dumb, actually wasn't that dumb. I always say I wasn't that dumb, but I wasn't a genius. But I was just insecure, and I got my sense of self. Eventually, I got my sense of self through discipline and work and the way I controlled. You know, I was a control freak. I had to control my training, control my body, control my food, and manage myself. And I've told a story a couple of times, but you may not have heard it, where I got really badly injured and the doctor said, you can't run. And he may as well have said, you can't fucking breathe. You can't breathe. I'm like, fuck you, I'm running. So I ran with an injury in excruciating pain and I probably delayed the healing by 2 years. I just went, I'm not stopping. Yeah. I'm not stopping, because I had such an addiction to that and I had such a need, because for me, the thought of stopping, and I know this is completely ridiculous, but this is part of my story, and I was young and immature, stopping was just like throwing in the towel.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, as long as I'm not, you know, as long as I'm not making it, as long as I'm not breaking my leg by running, I'm running.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it came out of that. And I think the thing is, Shelby, that grown-ups, and you're a grown-up, but I mean, you know, people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, old 60s. People. Yeah, old fucks. Steady on. You know, we all want, we might not be doing it on Insta or Facebook, but a lot of us are, but we all still want to be attractive and liked and valued because of, you know, whatever, and popular. And we kind of, some grown-ups look down their nose at what goes on Facebook or Insta, but they do the exact same thing in another way, you know. And so I think whether or not you're 14-year-old Jumbo or 21-year-old Shelby or 30-year-old Melissa or 115-year-old Harps is you're always trying to, you know, we all want the same things. We want to be happy. We don't want to be anxious. We want to be calm. We want to be loved. We want to be connected. We want to be safe. We don't want to be overly vulnerable. Yeah. You know, we want to grow and learn and evolve, but we don't want to get too uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, we think we're really different, but we're kind of not.
Yeah.
We're kind of not, you know, which is why, you know, whether you're young or old, whether you're rich or poor, whether it doesn't matter what sex, what gender, what culture, what color, what, you get past all those things that we think define us, which don't define us, and then you find the commonality of humanity.
Yeah.
And at our core, we're all emotional, spiritual, physical, creative, social creatures trying to figure shit out. And what I love about what you're doing is you're doing that at 21 and you'll be doing it when you're 31. Yeah. And what you discover now, some of it, you'll get to 31 and go, all right, well, that was bullshit.
Yeah.
But it was part of your journey.
Yeah.
It was part, because I thought when I discovered exercise and food and the issues that I, like, I could look a certain way and then people would, I thought like I found some fucking secret. Did you feel like that?
Yep.
Yeah, you know, like, fuck, I've found this thing. oh my God, I can control how people respond to me by just not eating, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. And you, does that resonate for you? Like as in trying to, you know, insecurity, approval, all that shit?
Yeah, 100%. I still find myself doing it now, and sometimes I'll, you know, put a post up, or I'll be talking to a friend and saying, you know, why are you trying to control this person? You can't control how they respond.
Yeah.
And sometimes I do have to sit back and listen to my own advice, because sometimes I'm like, oh, fuck, like this person thinks this about me. This person said this. This person's doing this. Mm. And yeah, you do have to sometimes sit yourself down and talk to yourself how you would talk to someone else, because you do, you get wrapped up in it a little bit.
Do you find, as somebody who, you know, 5 minutes ago was a teenager, do you find, like, is there either literal or perceived pressure on you to, and I don't just mean you, everyone your age, but is there pressure to look a certain way, be a certain way?
I think there definitely is. I think when I started my PT course, that was probably when it was at the worst for me.
Right.
I think I had this idea in my head that, you know, you have to walk the walk, which is true, but I think I put far too much pressure on myself to never eat Maccas again and never eat a grain of sugar ever again, because everyone would think that I'm a fraud if I'm you know, if I'm advertising my business, or if I'm saying, you know, it would help you if you did this, and then I'm not doing that, then no one's going to believe me. No one's going to want me. Everyone's going to think I'm a fraud.
Yeah.
And it did take me a while to sort of overcome that. And I resonated with what you said before about the control thing, about needing to be in control of all the situations. Something that I'm trying to deal with at the moment is being borderline personality disorder. Got diagnosed with that this year.
Yeah.
A lot of that is about being in control, which kind of leads on to my next question.
Can I just say one thing before your question?
Yeah.
So part of being more calm and less anxious is learning to be okay when you're not in control.
Yeah.
Right? Because so much of everything is out of your control.
Yeah.
What other people think, how people will respond, the weather, the government, what might happen tomorrow that's not in your control, which is fucking 98% of the things in your life, right?
Yeah.
So it's being okay with uncertainty.
Yeah.
It's being okay with lack of control. You know, you still control the stuff you can.
Yeah.
Of course. But you just go, you know what? The chances are you're going to live a pretty solid, happy life for the next 60 or 70 years. That's the chances are. But the chances are also that shit's going to happen. People are going to fuck you off. People are going to fuck you over. You're going to do the wrong thing. You're going to fuck up. You're going to be a dickhead at times. They're going to do that to you. You're going to fall in love and out of love. You're going to make mistakes. And this is the human experience.
Yeah.
The challenge in the middle of all of that, from my perspective, is how do I just be okay with all the normal human stuff? Like, okay, so some shit's going to happen. All right. Remember that word metacognition? Have you heard me use that? The calm in the chaos.
Yeah.
So your challenge is not to manage your life. Your challenge is to manage you in the middle of your life, because life is unmanageable. If your challenge, if your goal is to manage your life, you're always going to be anxious. So because you can't manage your life, there are too many variables. You can manage bits of your life. You can manage components of your life, but even then, not necessarily that much, really. You know, you can't manage your work. Are there other people there? Well, then you can't manage your work. You can manage you in the middle of work. You can manage your mind in the middle of work, or in the middle of this relationship, or in the middle of this challenge or problem. So this is what people fuck up. If I get too technical, just let me know. But this is what people fuck up with personal development. They think it's all it's about, you know, it's even though we say it's personal development, that most stuff that is sold as personal development is really impersonal, because it's not about the person. It's about their job or their money or their income or their situation or their brand or their, that's not personal development. That's impersonal development. Personal development is you. It's you. It's your mind. It's your emotions. It's your choices. It's your faith. It's your beliefs. It's your spirituality. It's your self-esteem. It's your excitement. It's your sadness. It's your issues. It's your bullshit. It's your strengths. It's your weaknesses. That's personal development, right? Yeah. The rest is life development.
Yeah.
That'd be $10.
Sort of leading on from that, what is the best advice that you think you could give for finding out who you are without all of the other bullshit, without your job, without what your friends think you should like, without your qualifications? Again, relating back to the borderline personality thing, it is, you can have a very big lack of sense of self and knowing who you really are.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people can relate to that. They might not have a mental illness specifically, but I think there's a lot of people that don't know who they are without all of the other stuff. And how do you think is the best way to really listen to who you actually are and figure out?
Well, Dr. Seuss would say that you are you and nobody else can do you. Okay, that's a good question. So we're talking about identity, and so I'll ask you a question. Where do you think, so who am I is my identity. Where do you think most people get their identity from?
I think a lot of people get their identity from how they were brought up and who they surround themselves with.
Yes. What else?
Your job.
Yep.
Your friends, your parents.
Yep. What about how you look?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people get very caught up in that.
So for a lot of people, their identity or their sense of self comes from where they grew up, their parents, their culture, their upbringing, all the external influences, what I look like, my body, my academic achievements, my job, my brand, my title at work, my bank balance, my car, my house, my clothes. All of those things are external. Identity is internal.
Yeah.
Identity is about who you are on the inside. All the rest is not you. All of those things I just described are 0% Shelby.
Yeah.
You don't live in any of that. They're just shit. They're just things that you have. They're just experiences that you've had or have, influences that you had or have, clothes that you wear, things that you might use, resources, but none of those things are you. So we look for identity in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Okay, so how we find identity is we go, well, beyond all of those things that I am not, what matters to me? And what matters to you are, I wrote the other day, and I've shared this again on a podcast, but what, you know, two questions that are really paramount. Question one is, what matters to me? What really, really, forget all the bullshit, but when it's just me and I'm quiet and I'm alone and no one's looking, I'm not trying to impress anyone and I'm not Snapchatting and I'm not Instaring and I'm not, then it's just me and just no one, what really matters to me, right? And then number two, what am I doing about that, right? So identity is, well, I believe identity should be something that works from the inside out, not the outside in, because when we follow the traditional model, the Australian model, which is an outside-in identification process, I am my job, I am my brand, I am my bank balance, I am what people think of me, we will always be insecure, which nobody wants to be. We'll always be insecure because that stuff can be taken away.
Yeah.
So you can lose your job, you can lose your looks, you're going to lose your looks. I was fucking so attractive for about 6 months. Then I turned two, right? Okay, it was a short window, but fucking hell, I killed it at creche. And, you know, but it's like I get paid really good money, right? And I don't say that with ego because for most of my life, I didn't.
Yeah.
I got paid somewhere between shit and okay money. But now that I'm old as fuck and I have a little bit of a brand and a profile and I'm blessed and grateful to have the opportunity to go and, you know, like tomorrow I fly to Perth to do 1 hour of work. And I, you know, it's what I get paid is silly compared to what I used to get paid. But people get paid more, people get paid less. But the point is that while I appreciate all of that and it's really nice, but money to me, hand on heart, honestly, it's a resource. That's yeah. it. And it's not bad. Money's great. It helps you do stuff. But it's not my fucking reason for living.
Yeah.
I would rather talk to you for free and help you and have a positive impact on you. That like I get more joy out of that than I do making X dollars for an hour of whatever, depending yeah. on what I'm doing. I mean, I guess it can be both. But what I'm saying is I get more joy out of helping people than I do out of the money that I make.
Yeah.
100%. And that might sound, oh, of course you're going to say that because you make really good. That's okay. People don't need to believe me. But that's the truth. It might be inconvenient for some people, or it might even bother people that I don't care because it's true. So when your internal sat nav is kind of highly, you know, you've kind of, you're tuned, you're dialed into it. And I'd say, so what matters to you? I want to be a good human. Cool. What does that mean? Oh, I want to be successful. What does that mean? Like, you've got to just keep asking questions and it will become clear. I want to live my values. I want to da-da-da-da-da. Okay, what does that look like? Well, if you were doing that, what would be happening? So yeah. it's you need to be a little bit of a detective, and you need to, which you have done, is you've kind of you've managed to extricate yourself perhaps from people who are not great influencers. Yeah. You told me there were a few people when we chatted before we went on air that you went, you know, what's not optimal for me to hang out with these people, so I don't anymore.
Yeah.
And it's trying to, everything, what's the right career path for me? What should I study? What do I need to know? What do I need to let go of? Who are the people that I want to spend time with? Because like it or not, you become them.
Yeah.
We were talking about how Craigified Melissa's been before we came on air, because she's just known me for a long time and she's so used to the shit that I speak and she's so used to the way that I connect and interact that sometimes she'll say something and I look at her like, fucking, what happened to you? What happened to you? You know, but you do. You're influenced by the people you're around. And if you're hanging around fuckwits, guess what? You can't help but become a bit of a fuckwit.
Yeah.
So you need to be careful who you let into your head and your heart. And one of the things I love about, you know, podcasts is any podcast, well, any good podcast, not just mine, is that you podcasts give you the opportunity, like some people are doing right now, to sit in and listen to a genuine 21-year-old young woman who's figuring shit out, who doesn't have her shit together totally, who yeah. knows that, who's okay with that,
yeah,
and who wants to come and learn some things,
yeah,
right? And that's that. And there'll be people listening to what I'm saying, people listening to what you're asking, going, oh, fuck, that's me, that's me. Because, yeah. the, you know, you can never go too far wrong when you're just talking about the human experience.
Yeah, I love that.
How are we going for time, Melissa? While our 48. Interviewer looks 48
minutes.
Frantically for another question. You're going very well, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're good. For somebody who's never sat near a microphone and has got a croaky voice,
yeah,
you're doing fine. It's all right, like let's do, I don't know, another one or two.
How would you go about making a big decision?
I would do a cost-benefit analysis. Do you know what that means? Do you want me to explain it?
Yes, I'd love that.
So a cost-benefit analysis is just means we just weigh up the pros and cons. If you said to me, do you want to give me an example of a big decision?
Can't say too much, but I have a friend of mine who has two very big opportunities and doesn't really know. And they need
to go one way or the other.
Yeah.
Okay, so to your friend, look, everything, especially when it comes to making decisions that are going to be, in a way, big or small, life-changing, situation-changing, everything's a calculated risk.
Yeah.
You know, I still do things that I don't know will work. Like we're running a program in a month or so in Perth that we've never run. It's a two-day program. We've got a beautiful venue, blah, blah, blah. By the way, buy a fucking ticket, will you? Scarborough. jump online. I'm only kidding. But But I don't know whether or not we're going to feel that. We might not if we don't, you know, but everything is where I'm constantly trying to, as is Melissa, in the context of our business, what's going to work? What will people attend? What do they want to hear? Should we do one podcast a week? Should we do three? Is three too many? Is it enough? Is it, you know, everything? It's so cost benefit analysis is essentially where you weigh up the potential positives and potential negatives and come to a decision. So yeah. I might go, yeah, maybe I'll do CrossFit. So the pros would be, well, it's social, there's connection. If you're in the right CrossFit box, you know, there's connection and people are into it and they're really motivated and there might be some good coaches and it's fun and there's fucking banging music and I'm a bit competitive, da-da-da-da-da-da, right? So they're the pros. And then the cons might be, you old as fuck, bro, you're for sure going to get injured. Your lower back is like plasticine and you've got fucking calves like Julia Roberts. So come on, seriously. Shout out to Julia. And you know, your rotator cuffs are fucked and you're probably – so you just go through it and I go, oh. So then I might go, you know what? What I'll do is I'll do one or two sessions, and in this instance, you probably can't with what you're talking about, but I'll do, and I'll see how I go, and I'll maybe, you know, like I'm actually a friend of mine. Shout out to Brad Rector at East Side Jiu-Jitsu. My boy Brad, he's just set up his dojo. He's just got his black belt, which people who don't understand Jiu-Jitsu wouldn't know. But getting a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is like getting a PhD. In fact, there's way more PhDs in Australia than BJJ black belts. So it's quite, so he's invited me a few times and I've been busy, but I'm going to go down. But even with that, I did a cost benefit analysis. I go, well, he's 30 and strong as fuck. He's a giant and he's a black belt. Well, I'm a nothing belt and I'm 100 and I'm like a piece of chalk with hair on top. So there's every chance that I'm going to get injured. And I think, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to do it the right way. So yeah. My very long-winded answer is cost-benefit analysis, weigh it up. But also maybe one other bit I'll chuck in is what's your why? So Simon Sinek, who's a good speaker, and a lot of other people have spoken about this over the years, but he did a good TED talk on this, whereas he talks about the reason behind the thing. So what do you want? Oh, I want to do this job. Great. Why? Because I'm going to get 200 grand a year. Okay, yeah, but why? Oh, well, but that because the ultimate why is because we think it's going to make our life better.
Yeah.
Like nobody goes, oh, I'm moving to, you know, the Sunshine Coast because I think my life will be worse. Nobody, you know, wants to write a book, or nobody wants to lose 30 kilos, or nobody wants to open their own business because they think their life will be worse.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody, especially in this space of, you know, personal or professional development, everybody does something or wants to do it or heads towards it because they think it will make their life better. And sometimes you really, really need to think it through. Like sometimes I have an idea and Melissa goes, yeah, but what about that? I go, oh, that's a good point. And she goes, and what about this? I go, fuck, I didn't think of that. And then 4 minutes later, I'm going, yeah, that's a stupid idea. Right? Because there's shit I didn't think about. Because sometimes I have a, hey, why don't we do some tech idea or some idea that I want to do? And then she goes, well,
here's what we're going to have to do to actually make it happen. Yeah,
like great idea, Harps, except here's the technical reality of making that work. I'm like, oh, because I'm a technophobe. I don't understand. All right, let's do two more quick.
You're not really
questions.
A technophobe. You just got a new toy.
Well, I did. I'm excited. I got some shout out to Rode, who I have no sponsorship with. I wish I did. But we got some new microphones, which means I can go and interview people anywhere, have a conversation with people anywhere. New amazing mics, and also for my fitness industry, spiritual, psychological, philosophical, deep people who know who Paul Check is. Paul Check, Chek. He's coming on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Very excited. Did a little bit of wee when I got that email. Just did a little happy dance in my cargos. Fucking, you know, I just held my lower back, of course, while I did it. But a little happy dance.
The people that comment on your cargos.
I know.
I swear.
Someone said, what did someone want to know?
Whether they're the same pair or whether you have different pairs that you rotate.
Yeah.
Like whether you just wear one pair out and then replace them.
Yeah. No. No, I have literally probably.
Get maybe some your brand spanking goes, new ones.
I've
maybe they need their own Instagram page.
Yeah. Well, like
Marshall Rogan.
Make some Joe cargo Rogan's mess. Dogs.
Well, I literally have probably 15 pairs of them, and I have right now I would have 5 brand new pairs in plastic.
I'm so glad we answered that important all right, question. Yeah,
okay. All right.
Well, there you go, Melissa. Instead of making hoodies, we need to make some cargo, some Craig Harper cargo pants.
Imagine if we had that. I reckon, you know what we definitely could do? We're digressing, but fuck it. We could definitely do t-shirts
with
some of my bullshit sayings, just black t-shirts with white
I
print.
I really would like to see
people
that
are happen. Always asking me about.
I'd like to do that.
Yeah, all right. Maybe the first one, and we don't be a fuckwit. Just something simple, or maybe.
What did you come up with yesterday? It was something like that.
I don't know. I don't know. No,
it's got fuck on it somewhere.
My best-selling book's got fuck on the front cover. I always tell people that. All right, let's do one more question, and then we'll put you back in your bloody car and send you back to Warrigal.
Have you ever been through a time in your life where you felt lost or stuck, and how did you get through that?
That's a good question. The answer is yes, where I felt lost or stuck. Yeah. Okay, so I'm just I think that, feeling – this is not very good listening, is it? Where I'm pausing and thinking. Okay, so one that comes to mind, which I'll – which I could probably, if I sat here for 5 minutes, come up with 20. But one obvious one that comes to mind is after about 25, no, probably honestly, after about 23 or 4 years of owning gyms. By the way, love personal training, love trainers, love the industry. But I, you know, everything has a use by date. And for me, it was my use by date in that space, in that I lost my passion for me personally. I started in gyms when I was 18 and I sold my, or got out of my last one 5 years ago when I was 51 or 50-ish. So that's a long time. So for 32 years, over 3 decades, I worked in that space with the general public and, you know, athletes and non-athletes and guys and girls and all that stuff.
That makes me feel young.
Yeah. Yeah. You are young.
You really are old.
You are young.
Old as fuck. Told you.
Ancient.
Yeah. So steady on. Fucking, all right. We got it the first time, you little fucker. All right, so, but yeah, I got to the point where I had a 10,000 square foot gym, the biggest PT studio in the country, trainers everywhere, clients everywhere, and it just for me personally wasn't working because I had mentally and emotionally had moved on, but I still had this huge commitment. I still had this place and all these people and this brand and this 50-foot sign across the front of the building with my name on it and all of these and also very much, you know, my name was synonymous with personal training and a lot of people just went, oh, he's the trainer, he's the, you know, not like, oh, he's the author or he's the podcaster or he's the speaker or he's the whatever, which is cool. That's completely understandable. But it took me and I started, you know, getting out of that, just that single identity a long time before that. But, and now there are a lot of people that don't know that I even ever worked in the fitness industry unless they hear it on here because they just go, oh, he's the coach dude or he's the podcast dude or he's the guy on radio or he's the guy that I read his book or, you know, whatever.
He's the guy that has 20 pairs of cargo shorts.
That's exactly right. He's the cargo.
He's the cargo man.
He's the cargo short guy. But so I think that, I think most people now who, okay, this is what I'm about to do is not technically correct, but I think there's kind of almost two types of people in for this conversation. And there are people that kind of get into a career and kind of, as long as it's okay, like I kind of like my job, I kind of like who I work with. And, you know, I start at this time, I finish at that time, I finish Friday at 5, I don't have to think about work for the week. And then I start back Monday. And I think for a lot of people, that model is really good.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's good or bad. I think it's actually for a lot of people, that's the right thing. And by the way, I get 4 or 6 weeks holiday, I get work care, I get superannuation, I get long service leave, right? Like my best mate, Vin, works on oil rigs and he's had a job since he left school. He started as an apprentice electrician. And I love him. He's an awesome human. And he does He has a job that he's always had, a version that's kind of evolved in different things, but clocks on, clocks off, works on oil rigs, week on, week off. And for him, perfect, because he has lots of time off, and when he's at work, he works hard. And for him, that's a really good model. For me, that would be a terrible model. And it's not because the actual work is bad, it's because it doesn't suit me. And my job for him would be terrible, right?
Yeah.
So it's trying to figure, it's not that there are good or bad jobs, it's just that there are situations, circumstances and jobs that, well, I'm sure there are bad jobs, but for the most part, it's really about what works for you or what suits you. And so there were times when not just I was stuck in career stuff, but I was stuck in my own bullshit where I was, you know, like with food and with my body and all of those things that I've spoken about a lot on the podcast, where I was just spinning my wheels, and I was literally, and I've been open and honest about this, I was teaching people to do the thing that I wasn't actually doing. You know, sometimes I'd eat well, sometimes I'd eat terribly.
Yeah.
But I would hide that behavior because I'm embarrassed, and then I would, like you said before, I would be a fraud. And so it's like everything is an ongoing process, you know, for you, because you've got body stuff and head stuff, just like Harps, and life stuff and relationship stuff, and all of that's okay. It's all, and for you to go, you know what, still struggle with food. It's okay. Cool.
Yeah.
If you didn't, I'd be surprised. If you never had a food issue, you're definitely lying.
Yeah.
Right? If I go, oh, I've never got any issues with that, I'm lying. So let's get over the bullshit and the brand and the appearance we want to create, and let's just be real, right? So there are things I'm good at, things I'm okay at, things I'm shit at, human. There are things that I don't struggle with at all. There are things that I struggle with a lot, and there are things I struggle with a little bit, you know? And so that's, again, that's the, we're not trying for perfection. We're trying for growth.
Yeah.
We're trying for improvement. And also it matters that in the middle of all of this, you know, these conversations about growth and learning and evolution, that we're still cognizant or mindful of the fact that I'm only ever going to live in the moment, because life's a constant series of now. There's no other time to live except now, you know. So even when tomorrow comes, tomorrow lunchtime won't be tomorrow. It'll be a new installment of now. Yesterday or this morning when you drove up, you know, that was now. You know what I'm saying? It's like we only ever live being a present tense verb in this moment, but we waste so much fucking energy on stuff that's out of our control, like the problems that might happen down the track.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying. Won't happen.
They probably won't. I'm not saying don't anticipate anything, but I'm saying don't lose fucking 3 years of your life stressing about a thing that may or may not happen. If it happens, deal with it.
Yeah.
Or what that person said to you 2 weeks ago at the train stop, that you haven't let that shit go, but they let it go 4 seconds after it came out of their mouth. And you've been in an emotional prison since then, because you didn't deal with it. You held on to it. And the only place that lives, in inverted commas, is in your head, because you're dragging it around with you like a fucking anchor. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
You know? So... anything else? One quick one. Anything? Thought? Idea? How was that for you?
Good. Loved it.
Good. What did you learn?
Learned that I'm a bit younger than I thought I was. Learned that Craig's a little bit older than he thinks that he is. Oh, gosh.
You're getting fucking cocky now. Well, I want to say to you, well done, you. You are interviewer number one, and you did a really good job, and appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule and coming down, having a conversation.
Thank you for having me. I do appreciate you. You're very welcome. Me come down.
You're very welcome. And fanging shit on me, you little fucker. Melissa, any thoughts? Any parting thoughts?
No, you did a great job.
Thank That's you. Great.
Are you excited about your holiday tomorrow?
Yes.
What time do you fly out of Melbs?
6 a.m.
Mm, terrific. So what time do you might as well not go to bed tonight.
That's okay. I'm going to have plenty of time to relax. Yeah, I'm a bit excited.
On the plane. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, for tuning in. Love your guts. Don't forget Perth. I'll be over there November 9 and 10. Details on my site. It's a two-day program. There are 60 spaces. It is at Rendezvous Hotel, which some people call Rendezvous. I personally think it's Rendezvous. We will be at Scarborough Beach. Some people call it Scarborough. I call it Scarborough Beach. All the
for a lot of never gets old.
Nobody's fucking coming now. Nobody. All right, team. See ya.
Bye.
See ya, Shelby.
Bye.
The addict in your family might need you to take the first step for them. They Have Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment has the experience, staff, resources, and processes to help you help your loved one. DAHAB's model of intensive rehabilitation has revolutionised the practice of addiction treatment in Australia. Registered with the DHHS, Department of Health and Human Services, DAHAB now offers rehabilitation programs for drug, alcohol and gambling addiction and is a private health fund approved treatment service. So if you or someone you care about is fighting addiction, there is hope. Addiction is treatable. Recovery is possible. Just ask me, call. And there is light at the end of the tunnel. DAHAB Private Hospital for Addiction Treatment. Call DAHAB on 1800 329 422 or learn more at DAHAB, DAYHAB, or one word, .com.au.